Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't sweat the technique. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The AI computer, all that stuff listens to us. On my timeline, Trevor Bauer's line score from last night popped up. My For You page. No, I think he's in Japan. He's on the Yaku Cosmopolitan. Last night for the Yaku Cosmopolitan, actually early this morning, I don't know what time it is over there. Trevor Bauer, 5 2/3, 8 hits, 4 runs, 2 walks, 6 Ks, 131 pitches. They're abusing the American's arm.
Pretty sure that his agent is not going to tweet that one out as a come get Trevor Bauer on your team.
It's not a terrible line score, but 4 runs in Japan's not great.
No.
He did generate 15 whiffs, though.
God, he threw 130 pitches?
They throw more pitches over there because they throw less often. Like, they throw once a week as opposed to once every 5-6 days. So they usually throw a little bit more pitches. They're usually healthier, too.
Man, that's a lot of pitches.
They probably don't have the spin and velo that we have over here.
I wonder what is fastball's topping out at?
Probably.
Because he used to be up in 90s,
maybe.
Right?
Yeah, he was in good stuff. Yeah. Plenty of stuff. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Love me some Derek Ward and Ben Tate back in the day, says Emily. It's going old school there with some of the old school Texans running backs. Another texter. Chubb's going to mess around and become number one. May the best running back win. If both are healthy, which we don't know about Chubb. I mean, Chubb is healthy, but Chubb's coming off a broken foot last year, tore up his knee the year prior to that. Did not look the same in the short time that he played last year. Joe Mixon, according to Aaron Wilson, was in a walking boot earlier this year, was not at mandatory minicamp, told he was in the facility. Sources said, Will Kunkel said that, but did not practice. If they're both healthy, what would you put the odds that Nick Chubb wins the job over Joe Mixon?
Very minimal.
RB1.
Very
minimal. I'm at less than 5%.
Yeah, I mean, if that. I just think that it's one thing to say that you've got the advantage of being able to go with a two-headed monster and that Chubb's going to get, you know, more than a series per half or, you know, whatever. I think he would get a lot more carries than that. I just don't think he's going to be running back one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm less than 5%.
Yeah, like,
I don't. If they're both healthy, I don't think that Chubb is, with the production we saw from him last year, is passing Joe Mixon, who was very productive as a Houston Texan last year.
It's 0%.
I think there's always better than a 0% chance.
I just don't think there's any chance. Because, like you said, all things considered, if they are healthy, if that's part of it, and Joe Mixon is healthy, then Joe Mixon is your running back one, no questions asked.
Well, there's always a chance. Always a chance.
You got 5% chance, and I got...
I said less than 5.
Okay. And it, for me, it ain't happening.
Here was Nick Chubb yesterday on why he wanted to be a Houston Texan.
I guess the biggest thing is knowing what this team is about from afar. I've always been a fan of Coach D'Amico, and I know some guys on the team. I know Joe Mixon. I know what he's about, and I watched him from afar on the other sideline plenty of years, and I know how he runs the ball, and I know the opportunity I had here with this team, you know, being an up-and-coming team, and past 2 years, I really turned it on. So I know I had a chance to come here and win a lot of games, surrounded by a great group of people.
There you go. Group of people, chance to win. Nick Chubb.
If you're Joe Mixon, is there any reason for you to be upset that you brought this guy in? Because I saw Blessing say that there were rumors out there that Mixon wasn't happy with this.
Yeah, I didn't see any of that.
But then when they interviewed Chubb, he said, we came out in the same draft class.
No, he didn't say that. He didn't. I know what your tweet you're referring to. He didn't say rumors from Mixon. He said he saw people wondering if Mixon was upset.
Okay. Because then I didn't realize this. They came out in the same draft class, and evidently they worked out together, but they know each other very well, and that they someone uncovered some video from like a year or so ago when they were asking Mixon about his take on different teams, different running backs, and he was just
put on the rundown.
Glowing about Chubb. I couldn't find the audio.
Well, you watched it.
I couldn't find the complete the interview with Mixon. I watched the Chubb interview.
It's one thing to be rooting for a running back coming back to another team. Like, he was happy that Nick Chubb on the road to recovery made his return. That was Joe Mixon rooting for the position. And look, a healthy respect for Chubb. But because Mixon was rooting for Nick Chubb and was happy that he returned to the football field after a catastrophic injury, doesn't equal that he's happy to be his teammate.
No, I think this was before he got hurt. This was at the start of the year prior to him getting hurt when he was talking about different running backs in the league. They were talking about running back combos or different running backs in the league. And he went out of his way to go on about Chubb because of their relationship.
Okay.
So I wouldn't think that I would think that this helps him because it kind of can give him a chance to stay fresh by taking some series off.
Yeah, I wish you would have grabbed the audio on that so we could have heard it. Here was Nick Chubb on sharing a backfield with Joe Mixon, though, because Chubb was asked about it.
Played against him twice a year, and I was always afraid that he would take over the game with his ability. You know, he runs super hard, and so I think both of us having those same intangibles would be tough for a defense to stop.
So at least a healthy respect for the two. Now, how do you think Joe Mixon feels about the Chubb signing? Because we have no idea. Joe Mixon's not on record. We haven't talked to Joe Mixon. But now you do have a running back in the room who could be seen as competition. Do you think that there's any ill feelings from Joe Mixon about it?
I personally don't. I would think that he saw what we saw, which was when he got hurt twice last year and missed some significant time, that the running game took a hit, and the running game wasn't even close to what it was when he was in there. If you've got a backup who is capable, like Nick Chubb is capable of being with his experience, and if he's got anything left in the tank, if I'm Joe Mixon, I'm happy as hell he's coming in, and if I have a relationship with him and I like the guy, I got no problems with it.
What if he takes his job like the Texters is alluding to?
Because he's got his money, and he's got his extension, and I don't think that he's looking over his shoulder worrying about someone taking his job.
Isn't this Mixon's last year?
No, I thought they extended him. I thought he's got this one and another one.
I can't remember the length of the how many more years they have Joe Mixon. But I don't think that there's any desire or whatever to be upset from Joe Mixon. I think he's totally okay. I also think Mixon understands that he is the starter on this team. And again, we don't feel like there's a chance that Nick Chubb is going to take his job. Now, Mixon is under contract at 26, but it's not guaranteed money. Okay. Zero guaranteed dollars. So They could, Joe Mixon didn't have a good 2025. Wash your hands of Joe Mixon at no cost. So, yes, it's a two-year deal, but the second year has zero guaranteed dollars. So, throw that into the equation. Here's one thing that I have kind of, like, noticed. Aaron Wilson reported yesterday that they worked out Jamichael Hasty recently, who's another running back. Is it wrong of me that I'm getting a little bit uncomfortable with how many running backs they're working out?
It's not wrong at all because, you know, I was thinking about it from the perspective we were talking about. Hey, well, now the Stroud and mystery is over with. But now do we need to come up one for Joe Mixon because of the fact that it's one thing to say that, oh, he was in a walking boot. Oh, guys do this all the time in the offseason. But if you're looking to, like, basically bring in more talent to your running back room, that would lead me to believe that it's more of a concern than just kind of insurance policies and strengthening the overall room. That would lead me to believe that there might be at least a shadow of a doubt when we're talking about percentages that Joe Mixon might not be ready for camp and or the start of the season.
I'm getting a little uncomfortable with all the running backs they're working out. So I went because, like, what Nick Chubb does this year is, like, if we assume that Mixon's the starter, Nick Chubb's the second running back, I mean, Woody Marks is still here. Like, you traded up for him. Like, they think highly of him. Damian Pierce is injured currently. How much does he factor in, if at all? But I went and looked at some of the numbers in Texans running back history as to the most yards from RB2. So this isn't the leading rusher every year. This is the guy who finished second, the second most rushing yards in a single season. Deshaun Watson's on the list three times, by the way. Deshaun Watson was the second leading runner for the Texans in 2018, 2019, and 2020. Now, the most yards, like, Ben Tate had 942 in 2011, which is kind of skews it. But if you go, and there was injuries there, he actually, like, started, like, nine games or whatever. The most yards from a true backup running back in a single season was 528 from Alfred Blue in 2014. There was 1 year Arian Foster had 542, but he got hurt that year, wasn't really the backup. So is 528 yards from Nick Chubb in play in 2025?
It seems a little high, but I think it's in play because I think he's capable, and I think that if Mixon, again, we talk about the tackle, the drop tackle that he went through last year and how it lingered and the games that he missed, I think 500 might be a little high, but I think that it just depends on – I think that would be where Mixon is missing time. I think that if he's just splitting carries or helping carries, pick up carries to give Mixon some rest, then I don't think he gets to 500.
After looking at the history of this, if Nick Chubb gets to 300 yards, I think it's a win. Mm-hmm. Just 300. Like in 300 yards, insurance policy, change of pace, and assuming Mixon's healthy, 300 yards I think is fine from Nick Chubb.
I think you get, you know, what we're averaging like, what, 25, 30 a game?
Yeah, I'd have to do the math on that.
I'm just trying to think. 17 games. Yeah, I mean, 20 a game, 25 a game, that's fine.
Last year, the second leading rusher on the Texans was Damian Pierce. You want to guess how many yards Damian Pierce ran for last year?
175.
That's not too far off. 293. Okay. I mean, he had that big run. Remember, he had like a 90-something yard run late in the year.
Yep.
293 yards. Like that was your backup running back last year. I think Nick Chubb is going to pass 293. Now, I don't think it's going to be like far greater than 300. That's why I think 300 is a win. If he gets 300, it's an upgrade. It's an upgrade from where you were a year ago.
Yeah, no. And I think that, again, the minute that they went out and got him, I felt like he's already penciled in for me at number two running back position. And then depending on what he has left in the tank, if he can be anywhere near the way he was before the last injury in Cleveland, that it's a massive win for this team because of the fact that you went through what you went through with Mixon with injuries a year ago, and because you've heard that they want to run the football and be a running football team. And so it could really help you when you go back to when they had Kareem Hunt and Chubb in Cleveland and both guys were effective. I think that's the ultimate ceiling for this team. I don't think they'd ever go to that level. But just if you get Nick Chubb to show that he is a capable running back, it's a huge win for this offense.
Texture, they're going to be tough, both going to keep each other fresh. Great move, Texans. Another texture, Nick Chubb, Joe Mixon, and Dalton Schultz would have been a great fantasy football team in 2020. Don't expect much from Chubb now. Injuries washed. And then another texture asking, is Chubb your inside the 20 running back? I don't think so. I don't think they view him as only an inside the 20 yard line running back. And Mixon's not like – Mixon's a fine power goal line guy too. I think he's just more of a true understudy.
I think Joe Mixon likes to get the touchdowns as well. And early in the season – I mean, he was really good in the red zone, running the football and getting scores. I don't think he's an inside, just a strictly inside the 20 guy.
No, I think he's like a true RB2. Like, I don't think he's situational. I think he's a true RB2. I think Woody Mark's probably going to position himself to be the third down guy most of the time. At least I hope. Let me give you traded up for him. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Have the Pacers already proved us wrong? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Last night, the Pacers defeated Oklahoma City. This guy says he wants Nick Chubb at fullback. Come on. Nick Chubb's not your fullback. He says, I miss fullbacks. I know I'm old. I do think that the Texans will carry a fullback this year.
Well, your boy's back, right, from injury?
You know, I say that, but then I'm like, is Nick Caley going to use a fullback? Like, I don't know enough about Caley to tell you definitively that he's going to use a fullback. Now, they did...
what's the big English guy?
You're thinking of British Brooks.
Yeah.
They did pick up Jacob Johnson. I don't know. I think he was a free agent. I don't know if they claimed him off waivers or if he's a free agent, but he's on the team, Jacob Johnson. If I had to guess right now, will Nick Caley carry a fullback on the 53? I would bet he does. I think Nick Caley will carry a fullback.
The Rams, I don't recall the Rams using a fullback often.
No. Did the Patriots, though?
I guess not. But
I think they did.
Did they?
I'm pretty sure. Back whenever he was there.
Who the heck was it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I can't even think of...
Get Paul on the phone. He'll know.
Good point. I maybe they will carry one and have some sets where they might go to it. I wouldn't expect to see it a whole lot.
Plus, Stover could also just provide the few snaps that you might have a fullback. So, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know enough about Nick Caley to have a good definitive guess and if whether or not they carry a fullback. And can they get by with Cade Stover being your fullback 5 to 10 times a game? Now, remember last year they brought back Andrew Beck. Like, they tried to use Stover a little bit, and then they brought back Beck, like, second half of the year. And I felt like they ran the ball actually better with a fullback.
Yeah, I do remember Stover using the tight end in the backfield as a fullback. So that is an option if you don't want to carry the extra body.
Yeah, it is an option. You wonder if it's a good option. Right. All right, Pacers beat the Thunder yesterday. First game in Indy. What'd you think? Have the Pacers already proved us wrong?
How so? I think that I thought the series would go six. I said this was a must win for the Pacers. I saw there's been some adjustments that I was a little bit unsure of, like with OKC mixing up their lineup that's worked all year. But I think what the Pacers did yet last night was impressive to me because of the fact that they were able to do some things defensively to really slow SGA down a little bit. Nembhard to me was a guy that was pesting SGA all over the place, and it kind of slowed down his ability to kind of split doubles, get the ball to where he get back in the open floor and go downhill. And I thought that he was really kind of slowing him down. And then at the same time, look, when your bench all contributes in different ways and you get Toppin to give you, what, 5 blocks and Mathurin gives you 27 points and McConnell was all over the place, the hustle play where he makes the layup, looks like he's going down court, turns around, picks it off and lays it back in at a time when they were still down 2 in the fourth quarter. Everybody contributed for the Pacers, and that was a team win. And Halliburton did what I thought he had to do, which was he had to be aggressive right from the jump ball. And now it's kind of like, I still believe OKC's going to win the series, but the pressure definitely now is on OKC, where this is a pretty important game tomorrow night.
Did you ever think it'd be 2-1 Indy?
I did not.
Yeah. I had the series going 6 whenever I predicted it on the air, but I said it easy 6. Like OKC cruises to a 6-game victory. Like, if they're up 3-1, they're never really threatened in the series. Like, take first 2, lose game 3, win game 4. And then I said 5 on TikTok, which looks even more foolish. Pacers have been far more competitive in this series than I thought they would be. I'm surprised that it's 2-1. And even though they have a 2-1 lead in the series, I kind of feel Oklahoma City still leads the series for whatever reason.
Well, and they're favored tomorrow night.
5.5.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm not going to waver off of the pick. I still think Oklahoma City is going to win this series. That said, maybe I was a little disrespectful to Indiana. Maybe I wasn't putting enough stock in the Eastern Conference. That said, I still think Oklahoma City wins the next 3 games in this series and wins it in 6.
Yeah, I had my buddy ask me, you want to change your prediction? No, I still believe OKC wins it in 6. I just think that we've got more of a series than kind of like you were saying, that I thought there was going to be. I just thought the depth, all the different weapons with more consistency when they do score with OKC, you can go veteran, you can go Caruso. The guys off the bench, when you call their number, they seem to be able to not only knock down threes, but they can score in a variety of ways, where I think Indiana struggles sometimes to find their offensive identity, especially when they're going to their second unit. Right now, they are overachieving off the bench, which really helps guys like Siakam and Halliburton, which carry the brunt of the load for Indiana. And I think the other thing is, when Indiana plays with such pace that you a lot of times force OKC to take bigs off the floor, I think that's an advantage when you got a guy like Turner that's athletic enough. He was sick last night, but he can make the three. He can go down and get a matchup on his hip to where he can score inside, and I think that's a big advantage for Indiana.
What did you think of that non-flagrant call late in the game that they reviewed, where Caruso had the open floor, got fouled from behind?
Yeah, I thought it was a flagrant. And I, you know, the fact that they said no wind-up, and then when you look at it, both hands were way up in the air coming down, and then the other technicality on the call is it's head and shoulders, and at least one of the hands came down on top of a shoulder before the other hand grabbed the shooting arm. And this is a play that Caruso's been injured for, where he broke a wrist earlier in his career a couple years ago with a guy like Grayson Allen, and that was a regular season game. Like, he immediately went to his wrist, too. And I just got – he is a big part of their bench. I thought that was a flagrant. I thought – and again, it could have made it a 6 or 5 point game, but I thought that regardless of the situation, that to me looked like it warranted a flagrant.
Yeah, I thought there was more flagrants called in the Rockets-Warriors series that were less than that. What we saw last night. Like, they caught a bunch of flagrants in the Rockets-Warriors series. I'm like, okay, that's borderline. And then I saw that one last night. I'm like, how are they calling flagrants in the Rockets-Warriors series that weren't even close to that? Like, he was completely behind him. I agree with you on the windup. Like, I forget the player that fouled him. Do you remember the name of the player? But whatever. It's not was it, pointless.
Was it Neesmith?
I thought it was Neesmith, yeah.
So he pulls both of his hands, like, behind his head. And, like, they don't say that's a windup. I just completely disagree. And then they said that he held him up. Javi was saying he didn't hold him up. Didn't. Caruso was trying to fight for the basket. Like, he wasn't being held up. The Neesmith's arms were on top of Caruso's arms and pushing him downward. I was surprised that was not a flagrant.
To your point on the Rockets and Golden State, I think that was more predicated by the fact that the theme of the entire series was the fact that it got chippy.
But it shouldn't matter. Like, if they're if they're telling you, here are the parameters of what counts as a flagrant foul, and you have to check. I mean, Breen said that it has to qualify. Two of the three have to be checked for it to be a flagrant. If they're telling us that here's the definition of it, here's what happens for it to be a flagrant, then tone of the series should not matter.
But it does. And I think that
how?
Because officials take it into their hands and they say that in order to keep control of this game and avoid the risk of it getting way out of hand, they will make a call like that. They'll live with the consequences after, and if they have to admit it after the game in a press conference or in a report, so be it. But it is pretty much a guarantee that the referees, when they see a game getting out of hand or they fear like it could get pretty nasty, that they will definitely call that quicker.
It shouldn't, because the rule's written differently. Rules written, here's what it has to happen for it to be a flagrant. The tone of the game should not matter based on the way that the rule is written. I'm okay giving officials leeway like that and like reading the room. I think that you should be able to read the room. I think you should be able to have some common sense. I was just stunned that one was not a flagrant. Texture, they were favored yesterday. The MVP on the road, scoring is down. Key from L.A., do you want to bet that OKC don't win three straight games, Indy in seven? Yeah, we can negotiate that, Key from L.A. I'm not going to surrender value, but if you want to negotiate something, we can negotiate something. Texture, that's one possession in OKC. I'm not saying it was the outcome of the game was not changed because of that call. Like, I'm not saying that at all. So don't get it twisted.
It makes it much more interesting if you give them two in possession, and what if they make a three on the possession? Now you're talking about a whole different final and a half minutes.
A bit of a reach to say what if they make a three, though. Like, the chances of them making a three is probably, what, 35%?
But even if they make a two, you're still five down?
Also a coin flip, you know?
Okay. I'm just saying, it had the chance to make it a hell of a lot more interesting down the stretch.
No doubt.
If you give them two in the ball.
Sure. Yeah, it absolutely does. Texture, that's one possession, and OKC was missing too many free throws. The ref for the ABC telecast said it wasn't a flagrant. That was Javi. But I was surprised it wasn't. And then Breen and Jefferson didn't agree with Javi. That was funny. Javi was the guy that hated Drexler.
Oh, he hated a lot of people. He was a guy. He was a mini Joey Crawford the way he wanted to make the game about him.
Yeah, he and Drexler. I remember their feud. They never liked each other. A texter earlier said, "I'm rooting for Indy because of Jairus Walker. Would like to get him a ring." Yeah, I'd like to see that too. I'd like Jairus Walker to get a ring. Unfortunately, he's got Cougs and isn't playing in this series. That would be fun.
When Mathurin was, I mean, a lot of people questioning, you know, where he's been, and then he steps up massively yesterday for them.
Ocho was a huge Benedict Mathurin guy.
Oh, yes, he was.
Coming out of the NBA draft. Yeah, he loved him. That. Some Benny Mathurin, who, how did Benny Mathurin fare against the Cougars, huh? How did Benny Mathurin do whenever he faced the vaunted Cougar defense? He lost to the Houston Cougars. Mm-hmm. But Texter said, who was the last Cougar to win an NBA championship? That's a good question. I would guess, I don't know.
Not Clyde.
It might be Clyde and Akeem.
Really?
Has there been a was
No? What's did House end up on a team somewhere? No, probably not.
I don't think so. Yeah, and he also didn't finish his career at Houston. So would that count?
No.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's been a Cougar that has won an NBA final since Akeem and Dream.
The younger guys that have been good haven't been on teams that were.
No. Like, you have the guys you have in the NBA right now, Shed, Toronto, no. Sasser, Detroit, no. Quentin Grimes has bounced around a little bit, but no. Hadn't won a title. I think it might be Dream and Akeem.
Yeah, I think that's probably – for some reason, we're missing somebody.
We might be.
Some guy that was like a maybe good at U of H, but then like a rotational player somewhere, like a guard.
Let's see if Google can tell us. The last Houston Cougar to win an NBA championship, according to Google, was Akeem Olajuwon. But see, that's not accurate because Clyde was also on that
same team.
Yeah. So maybe it was Clyde and Akeem. the last Houston Cougars to win a title. Because there's been a few NBA guys, but I can't remember anybody being on an NBA championship team. Like, did Damon Jones, did he win one?
Oh, Damon Jones won it with the Cavaliers, didn't he?
Was he on that team?
He was LeBron's, like, special teammate. Okay, wherever he went, Damon Jones went.
Well, he'd be your answer, I think.
Yeah, I think Damon Jones won it. I'm almost positive Damon Jones won a ring with the Cavs.
I couldn't remember if he was on that team.
I'm almost positive he was on one Cavs team that won it.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyways, those are the guys on the short list. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's get to Bad Take Boulevard. What are the worst takes of the week? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
Texter says Akeem and Clyde, the answer. Last Houston Cougar to win an NBA championship. Damon Jones won as an assistant, not as a player. He got to the finals one year in Cleveland, but they got swept by San Antonio. So, Akeem and Clyde. Let's see if Jairus Walker can do something that Akeem and Clyde were the last to do.
That'd be great.
That would be great. Texture says, I'm going to nominate you two for soft boys, but he misspelled two. So, I'm nominating you two, T-O-O, for soft boys. If you're going to insult people, you got to spell right. Like, you don't need to always spell right. Like, we don't care about grammar on the show. But if you're going to insult, you got to make sure the spelling is right.
What were we soft boys on?
I'm not sure. You'd have to ask the texture.
Yeah. I'm asking.
I'm a little soft in the middle.
I thought you were, how's that, you were doing the squats and all that.
That's not for public consumption. Okay. Thank you for outing me. Okay. Appreciate that. I'm not sure what he's nominating us for, but yeah, I've never, I'm soft about some stuff. Hard about others. Worst takes of the week. First one, Texans Chronicle listed the top five Texans of all time. The top five Texans: J.J. Watt, Andre Johnson, Arian Foster, Brian Cushing, and Deshaun Watson.
No.
It's right here. I posted the link. You could have looked at it.
I did. Won't you stop with those?
Stop with what?
I could have looked at it. I'm just saying that's could've. Ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. I'm not even sure he's the best quarterback of all time.
Like, five would be... Who?
I think DeAndre Hopkins.
That's probably,
if we're not counting John Weeks because his career's not over, I would have DeAndre Hopkins.
That's probably the right answer. Yeah.
I would argue for Schaub over.
I was going to say Schaub is close.
Not top five, but better quarterback.
Yes. And he also, because he had a couple of really good years here, that you could say that. Because their history, they haven't had that many big time players.
No. Who's fifth on? Those five are pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, three of those five are Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
I don't think Arian just didn't have a long enough career. His peak was obviously great, but he didn't have a long enough career to be a Hall of Famer. I do think he should be in the Ring of Honor.
I think he will eventually.
I think he should. Yeah, I would have DeAndre way ahead of Watson. Cushing's probably... I would have Hopkins ahead of Cushing. My top four, if we go Mount Rushmore instead of top five, I'd go Watt, Andre, DeAndre, Arian. I wouldn't have Cushing in my top four. I'm okay with Cushing in my top five.
Cushing was more of like the popularity thing, too, that like he was the face of a lot of everything on the defense and, you know, the jersey sales and the bloody face.
Oh, yeah.
That he got so much run for. But, yeah, I would definitely say that your top three includes D-Hop.
Now, I do think he is your all-time leader in tackles, though. So he does have some volume on top of being a fan favorite and, you know, being nuts. Which I hear he's still nuts. Okay, he's not. Here's another bad take for Texans thoughts or whatever. It lists him as the most tackles of all time. That's incorrect. So one, he's on the list for having Deshaun Watson in his top five. And then secondly, he's on the list for listing Brian Cushing as having the most tackles in Houston Texans history. He does not have the most tackles in Houston Texans history. He's third. Cushing has the third most tackles in Houston Texans history. You want to guess number one?
JJ.
No, he's fifth. He has the most sacks, but he's not racking up a bunch of tackles on the defensive line.
Wasn't here long enough, was he?
D'Amico's the answer.
Really?
D'Amico's the answer. You add the coaching, maybe D'Amico's top five Houston Texan of all time.
I think eventually D'Amico's going to get in the Ring of Honor.
Probably. Yeah, probably. Yeah, but you make the list twice. Texans Chronicle.
You just made the list!
Including Watson, and then saying Cushing had the most tackles. Whose second most tackles is pretty interesting. You would never guess. It's Kareem Jackson.
I was going to say J.J., but...
Oh, you were going to say. He's fourth. Okay. I would have never guessed a corner, ever. I just wouldn't.
He was a pretty aggressive corner, but yeah.
And he played forever.
Yeah.
They made the
Kareem
list.
Leads the, he's probably on the list for all-time late hits and personal fouls, right?
See, he added that late in his career. He wasn't like that for most of his career.
No, but then he made up for lost time.
But most of it was in Denver.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't, like, I do wonder. Like, he never had that reputation until he went to Denver.
Like, when he lost a step.
Yeah.
He became highly aggressive.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, he was never that guy, and then all of a sudden he was that guy. It's I don't know if it was, like, intentional or if he lost a step. It was just missing his spot.
Yeah, because he went from a really good defensive back for a lot of years to a guy that was more known for his physicality and his hitting and trying to knock people out.
Yeah, Dwayne Brown should be up there, says a texter. Would you have Brown ahead of Cushing, though? I don't know that I could.
I mean, it depends on, like, your criteria, right? Because wasn't he... I know he was first or second team All-Pro a couple years. And the Pro Bowls don't matter as much, and that luster's worn off. But he was highly considered one of the better tackles in the league for a good period of time.
Yeah, maybe that him versus Cushing's a debate. J. Joe, D'Amico, Dwayne Brown, all over Watson. I would agree there. Mm-hmm. I couldn't put Owen Daniels ahead of Watson, though.
No.
Number one, Earl Campbell. Never a Texan, my guy. Number two, Andre. Number three, JJ. Number four, Warren Moon. Never a Texan, my guy. And then number five, Deshaun.
Warren Moon on the committee for the World Cup?
Yeah, he was wearing number one up there the other day because they're 1 year away from... That was the biggest reach. Let's get Warren Moon at the podium because we're 1 year away from the World Cup beginning in America or in Houston. Because he wore number one. It was so weird. I saw that, yeah.
I hope, like, Brian Ching or someone that was a soccer player in this town is on that committee.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Our girl Tamara, who's a big Steelers fan, listens to the show all the time. We were discussing Rodgers going to Pittsburgh on February 12th, the timeline says. Tamara tweeted us at Pac-Man Joel, at Jeremy Branham, at Zach by BMAC, at ESPN 97.5, and Tamara said Rodgers would never be in Pittsburgh. Tomlin would never go for that. Tamara, we love you. Love that you listen to the show all the time. Love that you tweet in, talk to us a lot. But Tamara, we do not discriminate on Bad Take Boulevard. Love you, girl. Boy, you just made the list.
You just made the list.
Tamara got it.
I make it last week for that?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you made it. It was the very next day. I didn't realize I bookmarked Tamara's take and I didn't see it last week. But she got it this week. It's all right. Both of us saying that Forrest Whitley wouldn't get DFA'd this early in the year. Yeah, you got DFA'd. We have to wear that one.
I mean, you just think that with all of the speed in his arm and his ability to throw the fastball, I just think that his performance the last couple of appearances was just so bad, and he was out of options that it was the perfect storm. I just didn't think they would do it.
I didn't either. But we made the list. Got to own it. Got to take the L.
Made the list.
Wear it right on the elbow pad like Biggio used to do. I'm surprised we haven't seen I figured, when did they do that with Whitley? Didn't they do it over the weekend?
Yeah, it's been more than 48 hours. It's been long enough for someone to claim it,
I think,
right?
It's 3 days, right? And when did Walter start? Walter started on Sunday, didn't he?
He did, in Cleveland.
Like, how come we don't know?
To give McCullers the extra 2 days.
Well, how come we don't have Forrest Whitley news by now?
Maybe no one's going to claim him. Maybe he ends up going to Sugarland. That'd be great.
I hope that's happened. I would be shocked, though. I would be shocked.
I would as well.
One of these lousy teams who have no pitch. Like, the Red Sox yesterday traded for a pitcher who has an 8 ERA. Like, he does have a lot of strikeouts and has potential, but it's like kind of like Forrest Whitley a little bit. Like, somebody's going to claim Forrest Whitley. I just figured we would have the news by
like
now.
Even a Colorado, Miami, yeah. Chicago, the White Sox, teams that are just, you know, trying to see, kick the tires on younger players. He's still young enough. He's got a lively fastball. Take a shot.
Yeah, I think somebody will. I'm just surprised we haven't seen the news on it yet. We'll see. Brian McDonald makes the list. I feel a little bad doing it today because he's not here to defend his. No, I don't. I don't care that he's not here. I don't feel bad in the slightest. Last week, Brian gaslit us. We were talking Fromber. Might have been with the greatest lefty of all time in Astros history conversation. And Brian told us that Fromber doesn't have long hair anymore.
He did say that.
Brian told us he does not have long hair anymore. I was like, I don't really look at their hair. Like, I'm looking at other things when they pitch. I'm looking at a lot of other things. I'm not looking at their hair. But because Brian said that, I was like, oh, okay, Brian must be right. Because we know that Brian, when he speaks with conviction, with tons of conviction. So next time that Fromber pitches, He's got the dreads. He's got the long hair. Brian convinced me that he didn't have long hair. I look up next time Fromber's pitching, the greatest left-handed starter in Houston Astros history, and he's got the long hair.
Is it possible that because they are extensions, that he took a game off from them and then had them redone?
I could go look, but I don't want to.
Because I think that's an extremely long process. I think the last time he had it done, they were talking about like how many hours it takes to do that.
And I remember my reaction, too. I was like, I don't remember him having short hair recently. So I think that Brian, I mean, I know that Brian was wrong because the next time he pitched, he had long hair, but I don't believe he's had short hair all year. And I'm not going to go back at all 20 starts and look. I could, don't want to, not gonna. But Brian, you made the list.
You just made the list.
I don't think you'd have to. I think it was just recently, if it happened at all, because I do remember, I think, starting spring training that he still had him.
Yeah, Brian makes the list. New York Knicks make the list, too. They fired Tim Thibodeau, and they do not have a plan. How do you fire Tibbs, who's a really good coach, who's had tons of success with you, who's maximized your talent? How do you fire him and not have the next guy lined up already?
It's embarrassing because now it's basically how many teams can we call that already have a really good coach to see if they want to coach us instead of them so that they can get turned down? Like, that shows you just how lack of a plan they are in the fact that, Jay Kidd, wasn't allowed to talk. They weren't allowed to talk to Kidd.
Yeah.
They weren't allowed to talk to Finch. They weren't allowed to talk to Ime. Like, you had to look around the league and go, who doesn't have a job right now that might be the perfect fit for this team instead of trying to just poach someone from another squad?
They tried Quinn Snyder, too, for the Hawks.
Did they really?
Yes.
If I'm Quinn Snyder, I might want that job.
I don't know, man. They just fired Tibbs. Like, job security goes way down immediately.
But I'm saying he might get fired this year in Atlanta as opposed to he could get 4 or 5 year deal out of the Knicks at good money.
Yeah. But hey, it'd be smart if you just, at minimum, leverage it into a new contract. Mm-hmm. I don't mind the Knicks trying to poach a coach. I don't mind the Knicks poaching a coach. But you don't fire Tibbs unless you know the coach you're going to poach and you feel super confident, maybe guaranteed, that you're going to be able to poach said coach.
Like, how many times do we see it, whether it be college
I'm
or pros?
I'm dropping bars. I don't even know it.
Where you already know who your next coach is going to be before you fire the guy that everybody's surprised by. Like, the deal's already done except for the ink drying. But, yeah, the fact that they went about it like this looks like they had absolutely zero plan.
Yeah, I wasn't in favor of firing Tibbs, but if you're going to fire Tibbs, you have to know who your next head coach is before you fire Tibbs. This is organizational failure by
New York. And this is 25 years since they've been to the conference finals. He got them that far. And you let him go, and I think it's Leon Rose, the ex-agent, that's the president.
Yeah.
And they're saying the last time Leon Rose was involved with World Wide West, who's also now an executive with the team, was when they fired Carlisle after he made the conference finals. It's like, what are you doing?
Who do you think's going to be the coach?
I thought it was going to be, and again, here's a guy that's out there that isn't with anybody. The two guys I thought it was going to be were Mike Malone from Denver. Or I thought that Jay Wright, who left college coaching because he was completely frustrated with the transfer portal and NIL, that Jay Wright, with all those Villanova guys, would be a guy that has a winning pedigree that would be a perfect fit for that squad.
Yeah, I didn't think he'd be Wright. I don't think Wright's interested in coaching for whatever reason. Malone makes sense. I saw the I'm blanking on his name, coach the Cavs, Warriors assistant, Mike Brown.
Oh.
I saw his name being in the mix.
I saw one that would be really interesting because I think part of the reason why Tibbs got fired was Rick Brunson. But they were saying that with all these guys saying no, that they might keep Rick, that Brunson's dad might get the job. I'm like, I heard a lot of players had a big problem with the fact that Brunson's dad was on the bench.
That would be entertaining, but I feel like it'd be an awful hire. Terrible hire.
And again, Brunson comes out of the Van Gundy tree. Like, so does Tibbs. So you're getting essentially the same guy out of the same kind of guy out of the same system. Now, maybe he goes deeper into the rotation, but other than that, he's going to coach the same way.
Van Gundy would be fun. The betting favorites as of today, according to DraftKings Sportsbook, Mike Brown, the betting favorite at +110. Taylor Jenkins at +190. That would be a good get.
The ex-Memphis catch. I think he's
going to be a really good get. Johnny Bryant +350. Mike Malone +500. James Borrego, however you say his name, +2200. Mike Budenholzer +2200. Steve Nash +2500. Rick Brunson +2500. So if you think it's going to be Rick Brunson, you should play that.
I think you hit on
that's good odds.
Van Gundy would be really interesting.
But they're not going to Van Gundy would be highly entertaining and fun. The reason that it won't be Van Gundy is for what you just said.
Yeah,
they fired Tibbs because they don't want a defensive-minded coach who takes, you know, a boring offense with them. Like, they wanted a fun offense. They're not going to go. That's why I thought Udoka was weird. Like, Udoka's defensive first, too.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I just think Van Gundy's about to get another job. I just think, you know,
it's been so long.
To be the first assistant with the Clippers for a guy that, you know, he was making a boatload of money on TV, but he could have picked any job. He was the VP with the Celtics, just raking in coin to just kind of advise. But if he wants to sit there and go through an NBA grind sitting on the bench, he might as well be a head coach again.
See, I would. I don't think Van Gundy's going to be an NBA head coach again.
I do.
The only way I could see it is if whatever staff he's on fires their coach in season, and he's an interim and then keeps the job. I don't think he's going to leave a current position and be a head coach somewhere else. The last time he coached as a head coach was 07.
Yeah, but I think that because he's still now in tune with the game again as an assistant, and he's doing all the defensive scoutings and all the things that you just stay current with the way today's NBA is, I think he will, if there is a playoff-ready or playoff-and-more-ready team that has a vacancy, he will take that job.
I don't think he'll get one. We'll see. We'll hurry up and wait. Corey, give Sam Cassell a shot. He'll take some cojones to the Big Apple. No doubt about that. Malone may be the best free agent coach out there. Mount Rushmore's J.J. Watt, Dwayne Brown, Andre Johnson, Kyemi Fairbairn.
Stop it.
Soft boys. We're soft boys because of the hustling heart in sports and taking it easy. That's okay. You can call us soft boys. I would say smart boys.
Mm-hmm.
Smart boys, I think, is what you meant to say. Not soft, smart boys. One last one. I don't know who the ESPN 97.5 admin was who posted this Twitter. We have a lot of admins here that post a bunch of different things. But their headline, will Nick Chubb be a difference make for the Texans? Mm. Forgot the R.
That wasn't me.
There at the end.
Oh,
so I don't know who the admin was that posted that.
Quickly on the defensive there, kid.
Forgot the R, and you make the list, admin. That will not be named. Actually, I don't know who did it. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRNP listener line. We were asked this on Monday. Haven't gotten to it yet. But is Forrest Whitley the biggest draft bust in Houston sports history? And if not, who are? Who's in the conversation? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Biggest draft bust in Houston sports history. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Who is it for you?
First name that came to my mind was Mark Appel. You know, I mean, wasn't it twice? Where they drafted him, when they drafted him, and then he didn't sign the first time around?
I believe, I can't remember the exact story. No, I don't remember.
Okay, because I know he came out of Stanford, and then
I think he signed, and he just never lived up to hype. I think who you're thinking of is Brady Aiken. They drafted Brady Aiken,
oh,
never
that's
signed
right.
Brady
he
Aiken.
Sign. Yep.
Yeah, and
yep.
then they used yep. that pick, because that was the first pick of the draft of Brady Aiken. And then whenever the rules back then were, I still think they are the rule, that whenever you don't sign a player in the draft, you get that next year's pick plus one. So they drafted Brady Aiken number one, didn't sign him, so they got the compensation pick, number one pick plus one, which became the second pick, and that turned into Alex Bregman. Mm-hmm. So Brady not signing Brady Aiken was actually a win. It's hard for me to put any baseball player on the biggest bust in a city sports history, because it's very common for a first rounder to never make it to the bigs in Major League Baseball. So it's because of the sport. And because just the math of it, it's hard for me to put a baseball player on the biggest bust in Houston sports history simply because it's baseball.
And that's fair, because, you know, you always have the revisionist historians that go back and say, you drafted so-and-so and they never made it. And then these 10 major leaguers were drafted ahead of said player.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, that's, again, that kind of illustrates the point. You're drafting these kids on potential, a lot like the NBA draft now. You're drafting them on potential, but there's no guarantees like there are in football for the most part for first-round picks and at least more apt to hit on And then basketball.
See, I'm willing to eliminate baseball strictly because of the sport. Like, it's very rare, or it's, no, I shouldn't say rare, but it is very common for a first rounder to never make it, period. I also would eliminate, like, anything outside of a top five pick in the NBA. Like, if it's outside the top five and you have the ninth pick and he doesn't make it to the NBA, okay, that happens all the time. So I'm willing to eliminate baseball. I'm willing to eliminate anything outside of the top five in the NBA. And I don't believe the Rockets had anybody in the top five that you would consider a bust. Israel might consider Reed Sheppard a bust after one season. I don't think you can consider him a bust. You know, Jalen Green's been fine. Like, he hasn't been a star, but Jalen Green is not the worst number two pick of all time. Would you consider Rodney McCray a bust?
No, I thought he had a decent NBA career.
He had a decent career. He was drafted third. I mean, the Rockets had the first pick and the third pick in 83, went Ralph Sampson, Rodney McCray. Now, probably could have drafted, I mean, they could have drafted, and a lot of people wanted them to draft Clyde Drexler when they drafted Rodney McCray, but I wouldn't call Rodney McCray a bust.
No, I wouldn't either. I thought he had a decent NBA career, better than decent NBA career. He just wasn't a superstar, but I wouldn't call him a bust at all. And the name just slipped out of my head. The big bust, like Harold Miner, Baby Jordan.
Not Houston, and remember, but sure.
No, I'm just saying. But everybody wanted the Rockets to take Baby Jordan.
Really? I don't remember that at
all. Oh, they passed on him. They took Robert Horry. The entire place booed like crazy.
Really?
And then Robert Horry turned out to be pretty damn good.
I must have been a little bit young for that. That's yeah, I remember Harold Miner. He was just a big bust, period. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that that Houston fans wanted Harold Miner whenever he was in the NBA draft. That's funny. So, NFL... my two answers both come from the Texans, because I don't think there's anybody in Rockets history that's a huge
bust. I thought you were just talking about Astros. Okay.
Houston sports history was the tease. I think you have to go to Derek Carr, the first pick that they ever made, because, look, I mean, they could have drafted Julius Peppers, and Derek Carr never amounted to anything. Yeah. Now, did the Texans put him in a position of failure? They absolutely did. But Derek Carr is one of the guys that immediately comes to mind for me. And then the second guy that I think you can put in the conversations, Amobi Okoye.
Oh, I remember
number
him.
10 pick D-line. In 2007 that really did nothing for you. So my biggest two draft busts, and if I could go one further, would you count the expansion draft? Because Tony Boselli, who was the very first pick in Houston Texans history, expansion draft, never played it down for you.
Ever, yep. Yeah, no, I think, well, I mean, I would say that I would just stick to, like, the regular drafts, but it's fair with Boselli, and I remember Amobi Okoye, but, I mean, David Carr was a guy that was supposed to be all-world. He's supposed to be your franchise quarterback, and, you know, he was so gun-shy by getting crushed on every single play that he never amounted to much, but... I would say that, yeah, David Carr's got to be up there.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Vermont, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Vermont?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
I didn't know exactly when Tom Savage got drafted, but when you guys said that question, the biggest bust, that's the first name that came to my mind was the Tom Savage guy. That I mean, can you tell me, like, when did they draft? Like, what round was he? I remember there being a lot of hype behind that guy.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Appreciate the call, Vermont. Thank you for calling in. Savage was a fourth round draft pick. So
you're a Pitt?
He went to
Pitt or BC?
He went to three schools. He went to Rutgers, Arizona, and then his final school is Pitt.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't think you can include a fourth-round pick as the biggest bust in Houston sports history. Not even close. Like, he wouldn't even be in the player pool to select from. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What is the biggest draft bust in Houston history? Where's Forrest Whitley rank amongst those guys? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us. No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.